sanctions and ruthless no-mercy games of tennis on the rooftop courts of the Worldwide News Building. He had touched up his long wavy hair with subtle dabs of gray at his temples. It made him look more mature, he thought, more serious and reliable. "So what's our approach on this Martian fossil?" asked the bureau chief, sitting at the head of the table. The chief was rake-thin, all nerves and twitches, totally bald except for a ridiculous fringe of darkish hair that he kept long enough to tickle his collar. Everyone turned to Ventura, but before he could reply, the new morality consultant said softly, "Alleged fossil. No one has proved its age or even proved that it came from a Martian creature. It might be simply a strangely shaped piece of rock." "It makes for more audience interest if we call it a fossil," said Ventura, strongly enough to be firm, not so intense as to sound confrontive. Ventura thought of the consultant who sat at the bureau chief's right hand as a censor. No one in the network hierarchy would admit it, but they didn't want the new morality causing trouble for them. The rival network, Global News, had nearly gone bankrupt when the new morality arranged an international boycott of their broadcasts and the products that they advertised. The consultant's name was Shelby Ivers. He was a minister from the new morality's headquarters in Atlanta. He looked like a chubby, pink-faced, well-scrubbed young man with short, dark hair combed forward to hide a receding hairline. Instead of the usual ministerial garb of funereal black, he wore a cheerful checkered sports jacket and a tie of royal blue. Beneath his white shirt, Ventura was certain, a silver crucifix hung around his neck, its size determined by the man's estimation of the cleanliness of his soul. "The scientists themselves haven't agreed that it's a fossil," sniffed the consultant, frowning down the table toward Ventura. Lena Pickering, a sharp-eyed blonde producer, said with her usual annoying nasality, "The scientists never really agree on anything, do they?" Score one for Lena, Ventura thought, knowing that she was ambitious and wanted a spot on his staff. "Look," said the bureau chief, squirming in his chair, "everybody's calling it a fossil. We'd look pretty dumb if we just called it a rock, wouldn't we?"
"Call it an alleged fossil, then," insisted the consultant.
"A probable fossil?" suggested Ventura's director, sitting halfway down the table.
"A possible fossil," said the woman across the table from him.
"A fossil," Ventura insisted.
"But
we can put in a disclaimer at the beginning of the show," Ventura said, raising his voice enough to cut off all the others. "Say that the scientists believe it's a fossil, and until proven otherwise, that's what we're going to call it."
Everyone fell silent as the consultant drummed his fingers on the conference tabletop for a few moments. At last he shrugged.
"I'll write the disclaimer for you," he said.
"Fine," said Ventura. "All right," the bureau chief said, trying to smile. "That's settled. Now, I've got an idea for you to consider. How about having a co-host on this show with you, Lanny?"
Ventura winced at the nickname, but shuddered inwardly at the thought of sharing the spotlight.
"A co-host?" he asked in a deathly soft voice. "On my show?"
"Edie Elgin. She was a media star back during the first Mars expedition," the bureau chief said.
"She's retired. Lives on the moon now," said Ventura's top researcher, a meek-looking younger guy whose bland exterior hid a fervent ambition.
"She was shacked up with one of the scientists who went to Mars," Ventura said thinly.
"Right. James Waterman. He's chief scientist of the whole Mars program now."
The consultant spoke up.
"She'd be prejudiced in his favor then, wouldn't she?"
Nodding in the consultant's direction, Ventura said, "There is that."
"Or maybe she's pissed at him for dumping her," said one of the women.
"She dumped him, more likely. She's married to Douglas Stavinger now."
"The man whose body is filled with nanomachines?" the consultant blurted, frowning with distaste.
"She'll be even more biased. We can't have that kind of imbalance."
The bureau chief steepled his fingers in front of his chin.
"Maybe not, then," he muttered. "It was just a suggestion."
Ventura shot a silent glance of thanks toward the consultant, thinking that he owed the guy one. He also realized for the first time that the bureau chief was out to get him.
"So, who's going to be on your panel, Lanny?" the chief asked, as if he'd never suggested a co-host. "We'll need a scientist, of course."
More than one, said Ventura's own producer, sitting on his left. Lena Pickering said with a grin,
You put on two scientists, they'll start arguing with one another.
You put on three, and you'll get six different opinions, muttered one of the men halfway down the table.
Well, that's good, isn't it? Said the bureau chief. Controversy builds audience interest.
Ventura shook his head. When scientists start arguing, they go into their own specialized language. It's all incomprehensible gobbledygook. The audience can't follow them.
It's a real turnoff, chief.
The bureau chief scratched at his bald pate.
Okay, okay. One scientist, then. Who else?
A believer, said the consultant. We've got to have a believer on the panel.
You volunteering?
Ventura asked. He meant it to sound like an invitation, but despite his intentions, it came out more like a challenge. The consultant stared at him for a moment.
Me? Heavens no. I'm not a public persona.
No, Ventura replied silently. You never show your face to the public. You do your work behind their backs.
How about Penny Quinn? One of the women suggested. She's always interesting. She's off the wall.
Is she a believer?
I'm pretty sure she is. And she's a woman.
You don't want this panel to be all male.
Why not? Neanderthal!
The consultant folded his hands on the tabletop and said earnestly, We must have a believer. If we have a scientist, then we must have a believer in the interests of fairness and balance.
Where do you get this we stuff? Ventura asked silently.
But he owed the guy a favor, so he said nothing. Half a dozen names were suggested, all of them shot down by one or another of the people around the table.
Why not get the Pope? Someone grumbled.
Ventura brightened.
That's not a bad idea.
The bureau chief scowled down the table at him.
No, I don't mean the Pope himself, Ventura explained. But there's that priest at the Vatican, the one that was supposed to go on the first expedition but got sick and had to be replaced.
Yeah, I remember. He got appendicitis, didn't he?
Gallbladder.
Anyway, why not him? Ventura asked.
He's a scientist and a priest, for God's sake. He advises the Pope about scientific matters, if I remember right.
What's his name?
D something or other?
DiNardo, said Ventura.
The consultant looked less than pleased.
He's a geologist, isn't he?
A scientist.
But he's a priest as well.
But he's a scientist.
The argument went around the table for more than half an hour. In the end, while the bureau chief swallowed a handful of pills without water, they decided that the panel would consist of a British paleontologist who was spending a year at Yale, an evangelist minister whose TV shows always pulled in a huge audience, an actress who was starring in a docudrama series about the Salem witch trials, an author who'd written several books debunking the notion that intelligent life had ever existed on Mars, and two university students, one majoring in planetary sciences and the other in theology, plus the Reverend Dr. Fulvio A. DiNardo, S.J. Ventura nodded, satisfied that he had gotten what he needed for an exciting, informative show, and no goddamned co-host. Tithonium Base, The Dig. Jamie and Vijay were finishing their breakfasts in the nearly empty cafeteria.
They start early here, Vijay said between sips of tea.
Jamie started to reply, but saw a lanky young man walking slowly toward their table. Like almost everyone else at the base, he wore plain grayish-blue coveralls, unadorned except for the name tag pinned above the left breast pocket.
Dr. Waterman?
The youngster asked in a voice so soft Jamie had to strain to hear it.
I'm supposed to guide you around the dig this morning.
The young man stopped a respectful 2 meters from Jamie's chair. As he got to his feet, Jamie saw that he was quite tall, well over 6 feet, but youthfully slim, not yet grown into his adult weight. He wore his jet-black hair in a long ponytail, and his face was lean, with high cheekbones and the coppery skin of a fellow Native American.
You're Billy Greycloud?
Jamie asked, putting out his hand.
Yes, sir.
The resident Navajo. Until you arrived, of course. He smiled shyly.
Have a seat. We were just finishing. This is my wife, Vijay.
The kid dipped his chin.
Billy Greycloud, he said to Vijay as he sat down.
I'm pleased to meet you, Billy,
she said with a smile. Jamie said, Dr. Chang tells me you're a computer analyst.